Welcome to the Better Business, Better Life podcast. I'm your host, Stuart Wilkinson. Today, we're going to be talking about the changes to red light and more importantly, what it means now that we're going to be working through this pandemic and this latest outbreak of Omicron with no lockdowns. How does this actually affect our businesses and how do we keep them operational? We look at things like what happens if your staff get COVID or are close contact and have to isolate, what it also means for potential supply chain shortages. What happens if you as a business owner can't operate for a couple of weeks because you are a close contact or have COVID? So we look through a number of scenarios, whether you're in an office or if you're in a more front-facing business, whether it's like a restaurant or hairdresser, something like that. So we talk a lot about the HR and people side of things, and we also talk a lot about well-being. Joining me today on the podcast is AJ, who's our HR consultant, and Dave, who's our business partner based in Tauranga. This is quite a long conversation. We go through a lot of different tangents and things to think about of how you can use this opportunity to future-proof your business as a business owner and also for your staff. We do wrap it up with looking on the brighter side of life. What does this mean for long-term? What are the positives we potentially can take out of this situation and also this stage of the pandemic we're in? We hope you enjoy the podcast. Please like and subscribe wherever you're listening. Also, please give us a rating. It helps us massively reach a wider audience. Make sure you check out all the social media channels at Right Way On to keep up with all the latest information from Right Way. AJ, Dave, welcome to the podcast.
I'm back again.
Dave, frequent visitor. AJ, welcome. Have you been on yet, AJ? Is this your debut?
My debut, indeed.
Oh, this is
debut. Should we give you a round of applause for like being brave enough to come on a podcast with me and Stuart?
I could put some sound here, I think. We could go, geez.
Why don't we wait until after we've hit the podcast to see how we go?
So, AJ, you're backing yourself to make it right through to the publishing. I like it, the publishing.
Well, you got to give it a shot, right?
So, as announced on Sunday, New Zealand's moved to red light, which is nothing new. I was down at the supermarket on the Monday morning getting some milk. And once again, as New Zealanders, we seem to have panicked and the supermarket was, toilet paper. And I was thinking, especially being an Aucklander, we were only in Auckland, like red light about 4 weeks ago. It's not like it's a new thing for us. But anyway, so we're back into red light. But I think the change that we're seeing, I think, is that we're obviously moving into this stage of the pandemic where we are operating while the pandemic's happening, if that makes sense. We're not, the default position for New Zealand right back to March 2020 has obviously been lockdowns, and obviously the recent lockdown in Auckland predominantly for that from August, the last 3 months, and now we're in a very different world. So we thought we'd have a chat to get today, especially with Dave and AJ, obviously with AJ's specialization of HR and how this affects people, of, well, how do we now operate where in this world where, I do love the press and how they love to publish massive numbers of 10,000 cases a day and all that sort of stuff. And whatever happens, and we're not epidemiologists to predict that, but we're obviously operating in a space where cases are happening, and we want our businesses to still be able to operate in a succinct fashion and not be disrupted too much. So that's what today's chat's about, and some talking points and thinking points about how we manage this as business owners. So Dave, let's maybe start with you. I guess our first theme we thought we'd talk about is what does it mean. I'm not going to go and read out the red framework to everyone because
everyone's probably read it.
Correct, covid19.gov.nz. But what was the first thing that you came to light for you when you thought about this world that we're now, this stage of the pandemic that we're operating? What was the things you think we've got to start to consider?
Well, I suppose for me it's interesting because I used to own a physio practice and gym side of things, so very much front facing. And now I work in an office. So I guess I'm kind of been forced to look at it from what I'd consider as the two polarizing kind of views right now. So from a office point of view, it's a little bit to a large degree, I don't feel like too much is changing other than potentially being a bit more cautious in the office space and obviously kind of, taking the lead of what you guys are saying. But from a front-facing business point of view, I kind of feel like it's all battle stations, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, you've got to be ready for staff shortages, supply chain issues, calming down your potential audience. Are they still going to be coming in if they're panicking? And yeah, just really kind of getting your head around that. And I think a lot of those businesses are probably pretty well geared for it. You know, they would have thought about it and they would have planned about it, but now it's actually a case of putting the plan into action, isn't it?
AJ, from your point of view, when we kind of, you know, now we're operating this stage, what were the sort of first things that came to your mind when thinking, well, hey, look, these are the top of mind things that business owners should start thinking about?
Very much like Dave, for those front-facing businesses where, you know, interaction with the public is crucial to their business, it's part of what drives their service offering or their product offering, how to best manage their health and safety obligations, not only to their employees but to their customers, and then how to get the best in a situation where there are going to be reasonably strong restrictions in terms of, as you've already pointed out, numbers, attending or distancing or hygiene procedures, everything that goes with that, and what pinch points that's going to create. And I'm going to apologize in advance because I do use that term quite a lot. but that's really what it comes down to, is what changes in work practices, what issues that's going to create as a flow-on effect, and then how to manage that the best you can, given that we can't anticipate every flow-on effect that's going to come our way.
Yeah. I think pinch point's actually a really good term, actually, AJ. Yeah. I think you can, permission to keep using it, because I think it's really, that kind of sums up. Because I think for me, I think it's kind of two main streams that any business owner has to think about. Is one, obviously, priority ones, your staff, in particular, obviously, the ones that it does. And look, David, you made a good point that we're obviously in this accountancy firm, we're office based or, you know, work from home. We've got less disruption because we can operate from home, being cloud-based and stuff, but also we've got more flexibility compared to restaurants, those sort of things, retail. But it is also that, you know, the first part that came to mind for me was, hey, how do you manage your team to make sure they're safe? But also, you know, one thing we talked about in our business is if a COVID case got into our office, that whole office then would be off the tools and stuff and stuck at home and whatever for a good period of time. And I think that the thing that I think is really concerning people at the moment, or probably is the alarm bell, is the current stand down periods of, you know, hey, 14 days, but then if you're a close contact, that's another 10 days. And they're talking about this 24-day window. That's a lot of time for people. And obviously that's your whole family that's then locked down. And so for us, as you know, think of our staff, is just, we don't want anyone to go through that. So it's how do you manage that? But yeah. Secondly, you know, obviously the staff point, and especially your front-facing staff, how you manage that, but then impacts the supply chain. And I know the supermarkets in particular, fuel companies and transport companies have talked a lot about this, of how they manage that. Because if, you know, it got into a supermarket, you know, a case in the supermarket, and they had shut down the supermarket and all the staff that affected, that's interruptions potentially in this new world that we're operating in. So there is no doubt there's the staff aspect, but there's also the supply chain aspect, which I think has come front to mind, which is, I wouldn't say we've not had that consideration before, but it's really heightened in this world where we're operating, so not as normal, but we're trying to get on with life still with a pandemic running. I think it's the first.
Can I just make a note on that, Stu, to your point? There is some changing advice coming out at the moment. So some sectors are going to have the capacity, supposedly, making an assumption, there's access to the rapid antigen testing, but there is going to be some testing to work for some sectors. And also, as far as I'm aware, in the next 2 days, there's going to be some more advisory around those isolation periods coming out. So this, of course, is all changing advice as it happens, as always.
It's still not going to change the fact, though, is it, that at some point
you might
there's
have
a strong potential that you're going to get shut down for a period of time, whether it's a week, 2 weeks, or 3 weeks.
Correct.
You know, like someone wanders into a physio practice as a close contact, do you know what I mean? Or a gym, close contact. Bang, wipes out your staff in one go. It's like, how do you protect against that?
Yeah.
You know, absolutely. And even if it is a shortened period, it's like you've still got to, I think, prepare for it, haven't you?
Yeah.
Exactly right. And for everyone's reference, we're recording this on Wednesday, 26th of January. Yeah. So tomorrow, Thursday, there's apparently an announcement, to your point, AJ, about the stand down periods and all this sort of stuff, because I know that's been getting a little bit of, what's the word? It's been talked about. Yeah, pushback. Yeah. That's a polite word.
It is really interesting, just from like, I remember just with owning a business at the time, I just wanted people to be cool and be rational and kind of read the room. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, what are the cases in your area at the moment? Oh, it's really low. Okay, well, there's no need to panic. Do you know what I mean? It's like, try and carry on with your daily life, because, you know, just say for us in the Taringer office, it's like, there's probably $35 not getting spent across the road at the coffee shop every day right now. Do you know what I mean? And it's like, well, that's a direct impact of us shutting the office down. So it's kind of like, do you know what it is? And imagine that scaled up. So it's like, until there's reason to panic, we should just be trying to live our lives.
Exactly right. And I think, and the one thing we've talked about our work is that also, you know, it's, again, we're office bound, so there's a lot more, it's easier for us to work at home, but it's also making sure that, you know, from a staff point of view and your own staff point of view, is you're allowing them to de-risk work as an opportunity so they can do other things that might be really important. So, for example, if you've got elderly parents that you need to make sure you check in on a regular basis, that you go, hey, well, you can work from home, so that's another risk point for you in your life. And everyone's different in that sense. But I think that comes back to your point, Dave. It is about being it's just being practical and making sure people are comfortable and your staff are comfortable. But there is no doubt. I was just speaking to a friend this morning. He works in the car industry, and all their back house of staff are working from home. But obviously their sales guys are there, and he's like, it's just going to be really hard to manage that through different teams and all that sort of stuff. But as you said, Dave, similar to a gym, if someone comes in close contact or a case and it gets through their sales, they're off. The whole business is kind of, you know, I think it comes back to, and we've done multiple podcast conversations. There's a great one on e-commerce in particular, but just reviewing those distribution channels of your product again. And obviously we want people to be going into restaurants and cafes and spending the money, to your point, Dave, but just making sure, and I think, you know, Dave, I think you made this point on a previous podcast of us, how you make your customers really comfortable coming in and still buying off you and going, hey, look, cool. Yep. If you want to do click and collect, we've got that as an option. If you want to come sit down with your family and have brunch, you can do that as well. But we've got kind of all these options covered, and we're just keeping ourselves agile in how we deliver our service, goods or services, because one, that makes your customers feel happy. And two, that probably maximizes your revenue opportunity through this time as well.
And there is lots to be learnt, isn't there? We've had big lockdowns, we've had full lockdowns, and there's stuff that you did in that lockdown that you could probably integrate into Red to make some of your customers happier with the situation. You could be doing online classes, you can be doing click and collect food, you can be doing all sorts of different stuff to, like, right now increase your offerings. And say you are office bound, like an office based job, you know, you can ensure people are taking laptops home, you can ensure they've got good setups at home, they're writing notes at the end of every day so that work's easy to hand over. There's lots of things, like little things you can be putting in place. And even I spoke to the new owners of the physio practice, and it was like, well, just because they can't work hands-on, which obviously physiotherapy is, doesn't mean that they can't be bringing your standard operating procedures up to date, writing out marketing material for the next 12 months, coming up with lots of other things if they have to isolate, but they're still capable of working. You know,
that's
it comes really down easy to like just shut it down, isn't it? Be like, oh, isolating, they're at home.
Yeah. Cool.
There's nothing they can do.
But it's taking an analytical approach to all the tasks in your business and what can be done from home, what can't be done from home or remotely, however that plays out. And then what key roles really need to, who are intrinsic to the business operations, if any. Yeah. And then what's your succession plan for those key roles? Should that person be out for the, let's say, 3 weeks? And if you don't have a succession plan, how about training someone to step into the breach if necessary? There's a lot to think about in terms of getting that the discipline of having some plans in place in order to best address the situation, which might happen so many times over the next few months. We just don't really know.
Because I guess picking up on that, AJ, and I think that's a really good point about contingency and succession is, like, say you're a restaurant or a cafe and you have, I'll call it a bar manager or a gym manager if you're a gym, you know, I guess if you only have one person that knows everything to do with managing the roster or just how we do these certain tasks or whatever, that's where your pinch points, to use your word, AJ, is going to really come. Because I guess what you kind of want to be able to do is go, hey, look, what we want to be able to de-risk is if Dave, gym manager, has to go and isolate or gets COVID or whatever, actually, I've already started to put some backup in place with John. And so he's already done some handover work. So John, because I think the risk then relies on, if you need someone that has to be there 5 days a week, you're exposing them more than anyone else in your operation. And so hence the risk of then the business being impacted, not just from staff being at home, but key staff, as your point, AJ. That's where people are going to guess, get interrupted more than if they've actually got a couple of 2 ICs or team leader or whatever the title. And I know a lot of businesses, you know, you're not big, there's 5 to 10 staff, whatever it might be. But if they have just got one chef that knows exactly how to do that, well, maybe it's time to get the other chef to start to back them up a little bit, just in case. I think we've got to really think a bit differently about that and being a bit more agile about succession, I think, is a really good point, AJ.
And that certainly applies to business owners as well, because often, that IP sits in their head. And you know, even little things, like if you are seriously unwell with COVID or anything, let's be honest, and you're lying in a hospital bed and you're intubated, someone can't get those passwords out of your head to run your business and pay your staff. And so having those mitigation plans, I mean, COVID is a good example of why you need succession planning and plans in place for all these things. But it should be front and center of mind, certainly, with everybody who has their small business. They've got a team of people that rely on them for their livelihood. And most people are very aware of that, of course. So
there should be a manual, shouldn't there?
Should be a manual.
Pick it up and run this role and get away with it.
Yeah,
exactly. And I think, well, and look, you know, we are going to end with some positive, by the way, then, guys. This is not all doom and gloom. But I think that's an excellent point, AJ, in the sense that a lot of our business owners we deal with, especially when you are in that technical role or the doer role that on the tools or whatever term you want to use, one of the things we often talk about is, hey, can you take a holiday? And they go, oh, kind of, but I'm still going to have to be on call for that or whatever. You know, there's always an if or an but, and the moons have got to align, kind of thing. Well, using this as an opportunity where that actually you've got to really plan seriously, because it's quite serious if you do move out the business, and thinking, well, what happens if I'm not available for 7 days? What would happen? Who can help manage the team? Who can make sure deliveries are made? Who can deal with customers? Is a really good exercise for the long term of your success as a business, and also as you as a business owner. So it's looking at these things with, you know, I'm a bit of a glass half full kind of guy, but the silver lining of this, some of these processes and actual thought process will stand you in really good stead moving forward, just to have a better life, to be honest.
They'll make your business a more profitable entity as well, because in the process of it, it'll make it a sellable commodity, which a lot of people forget to do when they're working on a business like this. It's like the golden egg is when you sell a business at the end. And people forget that, massively forget that.
So in our brainstorm, so let's talk through, we talked through, we did a bit of a brainstorm before this, for the podcast, me, AJ and Dave, and put through some different, one of the things we want to talk about is different scenarios. So office, I don't think we need to labor too much about offices, in the sense that, you know, one, if you're not cloud-based by now with Teams, Zoom, your softwares that you use, whatever, I hate to say, when are you going to get that? So, you know, good luck to you if you're not, but you should be there anyway. So I'm not going to cover that. That's a bit harsh, but reality.
2 years guess, in.
Yeah, well, you're probably not here, to be honest. No. Well, come on, you know. Anyway, I've got a bit hard. I don't know if it's just I have had my two coffees.
Is this COVID two? That's why you need three, at least three.
Well, no, well,
you've got to be up to operating levels.
You have understanding of this, and AJ has understanding of this previously. It's maybe having a 2.5-year-old and 3-month-year-old at home and not sleeping much.
Oh, yes.
I had the classic. So, I managed to drop my phone on the stairs as I was trying to sneak out the house to go for a paddle this morning at 5 o'clock, which proceeded to wake up the 2-year-old.
Yeah. And then you'll. So I think that the obviously, you know, the ability to work from home, as Dave said, talked about, you know, being clear on when people should be in the office, and there's a particular issues like people, you know, some people that live in rural areas, they don't have great technical internet, and so it makes it easier for them to work. That's cool. So I think it's having good communication, good plans around that. I don't think that we need to labor that. I do think that front house one is the one that we need to talk about. So some of the things we've talked about is managing obviously that close contact, but also can you work in teams and pods? I know Christy, who's one of our accounting managers, talking about one of their clients who's an electrician. They for quite a while, and I think they have like ongoing maintenance contracts for. I might have made that up, but they've had two teams for quite a while, and those two teams don't mix. And the idea being is that because they need to maintain their service delivery through if something happens. So if they don't cross, it means the other team can always step in if needed. So it's thinking about the point. I guess AJ, is there anything from an HR point of view people need to think about if they put teams in place or pods or working groups or whatever word you want to use there? Or is it just, hey, just having a plan around that?
Pretty much it's just considering the skill sets in that one, if we're going to call it a team that can undertake your service delivery, in that team, who's got the key skills, who hasn't got quite the skills that are needed, is there a way we can upskill them so they can, you know, so that team is a complete set of people with the complete set of skills, and team B is the same, and then you've got that full coverage as this electrician has. So really just about making a plan, if it's not in place already, around upskilling, how to do that. And then, of course, in the practical sense of if you've got an instructor who's in team A, but they need to bring someone in team B up to speed, how do you do that in a way that's limiting, contact and potential for crossover, and just hygiene practices around that. And then I guess within those teams, if one team is exposed and there is an isolation procedure that has to then happen, how and why that's going to happen, and can some of the team remain working?
Yep.
And that, of course, will come down to some of these isolation procedures that are going to be effectively more detailed by the government.
Yeah,
because there's an opportunity here as business owners, not from a point of view of surviving, but to actually like leverage the situation to your advantage. You know what I mean? It's like by being the guys who are safe, or you know, having systems in place so you can service the people who don't want to see you online, but whether the employee does a meeting but then has to have stand down time if they're happy to do it, or do you know what I mean? Is there like options there to actually swing this into a positive? You know, if you're the only electrical contractor who's still up and operating because the whole company got shut down, well, that's going to sit you in good strength moving forward, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think to your point, AJ, is really, you know, if something does happen to one of those teams, or, and it doesn't matter which environment you're in, is what's the process so you can hand over the work, do a briefing of the jobs are outstanding. You know, like to your point, Dave, is there some sort of CRM or something system where you just make sure you've got, you're just not really are honing on the quality of your notes at the moment or something like that? Because also, like, we don't want to play this down in the sense that, and AJ kind of raised the kind of what could happen, is there's people that could get really sick from this. Like, we do know that with Omicron it's less severe, but you also want to make sure that if people can't hand over because they're like, actually, you need to just look after yourself.
Yeah.
We're not going, oh, Dave, do you just mind having a quick hour Zoom call just to hand over what we're doing on ABC's site? And they're like, actually, I'm quite sick and I call you, you know, you don't like, you know, you got to think about it. Yeah, there's an inconvenience, but we also want to just put practice. So we just, if people need to rest and look after themselves, they can do that as well.
Yeah. And whatever we put in place has to be sustainable.
Yeah.
This isn't a 3-week job done, is it? It's, well, maybe going to be some variation of it, probably 4 to 6 months. I'm just totally guessing. But if you look at like other countries.
Yeah.
When did we shut off to Australia? Was it like November sometime?
Just something like that.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Oh, like, it would have been before that because it would have been when we went to lockdown. It would probably have been August when we went into lockdown, I imagine.
Yeah, so it's like, you know, and okay, they didn't have Omicron then, but, you know, you're talking a good, like, if you look at the UK, they're talking like 3 months before they've started to subside. So, yeah. And they're lifting restrictions, but they're obviously in a very different boat of, yeah, we won't go there.
Oh, Boris Lee, seems to be doing a fine job.
He's having a great time.
He's having a great few weeks. Me and Dave from the UK, so we feel we can comment on that.
Yeah, he's just, you know, we're partying it up at number 10
with a joyful view on it. Anyway, one thing I think, and look, AJ, I'll get AJ to talk through this because this is the detail, a bit of detail, is one of the key things I think now, which has been in place since the start of the lockdowns and level fours, etc., has been the COVID-19 leave support scheme. So what this is if you have someone that is sick and cannot come to work, and especially if they're field-based or front-facing, it really applies to this, is obviously the government are putting in place support payments for you to be able to pay that person's salary or subsidize their salary to some degree while they're having to be, whether it's they're just home isolation because they're close contact or whatever, but they cannot come to work. AJ, do you want to just talk through the details of what's available for business owners, because this is actually going to become much more important probably now than it was previously, but also secondly, the things that actually the obligations of the employer and business owners that they need to kind of be aware of if they are receiving these funds from the government.
Sure. Yes. The first point really is that the people eligible for this payment are only people who cannot work from home. So then, if you have staff and you have different roles and some people can work from home and some people can't, then it's going to be a conversation when you have this planning meeting with your staff, talking about all the different things we've covered. It's going to be about identifying which roles definitively can work from home and which ones can't, and then individual conversations subsequent to that as to how payment is going to be managed for those different roles. And, you know, reduction in hours possibly, but that's kind of a bit further down the boat. In terms of the leave support scheme, there's $600 a week for anyone who works more than 20 hours. There's $359 a week for anyone working less than 20 hours or whatever they would normally earn. And you have to be advised by MOH to self-isolate for 4 consecutive calendar days. That's the eligibility criteria.
Yep.
The business must endeavour to pay their employees 80% of their usual wages or salary. Again, it's the best endeavour component, so effectively it's affordability, bearing in mind, as Dave said, this could be 4 to 6 months. And as
you could end up there a couple of times.
Can I
just quickly jump in? Like from a point of view of like being able to work, I think it's actually really important for the business owners not just to think about it from a job point of view, like, for example, I can do my role from home. However, there's going to be other people who've got the same job role as me, but actually feasibly may not be able to do it from home if they've got 4 kids running around the house or solo parent and the kids isolating. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, actually, yes, it's like, consider the environmental side of it as well. It's like, actually, can they work from home or not? Because it may be a case of, okay, well, that means that we're going to make you, this is going to effectively, you're just going to be on stand down, or do you know what I mean? And actually you might find that takes pressure off them.
Yep, I agree. And that is
probably the right thing to do.
I've had a conversation with an employer yesterday about we need to define in those roles how reasonable and how realistic and practical it is for some of the roles to do any work at all from home. Or is it better that we define that those roles just simply can't work from home and they get the opportunity to have the leave support payment?
Yeah.
It's a question you have to, you know, work through with your employees and have that, yeah, absolutely apply that thinking to, well, maybe for some people it's going to be better that they just stay at home and get the leave support payment, or is it going to be better for the business and the employee overall if they can work practically from home to do so? So that's a conversation with your employees.
AJ, I'm about to ask a very HR question, and you might go, "Ooh, Stu, that's a curly one." So, say say in my situation, I'm a close contact. A waitress or waiter, whatever. I'm in a front of house, front of facing role, so which means I cannot work from home. Let's make that a really simple example.
Yeah.
I'm a close contact. I've been asked, I've got to do my self-isolation. Cool. If I then diagnose is probably the better thing, of COVID, and I become sick, how does the leave support payment work? Because obviously this is about people not coming to work when they're potentially infectious that's what the whole role of this is. What happens if I actually become sick and I cannot do my work, not just because I guess there's that whole point that Dave said of practically of doing the work for work from home, can I do it, can I not? But if you come sick, does that turn into sick leave, or how does it work alongside the leave support payment?
Two aspects to that, I guess. If you're isolating but you're not unwell, you're obviously, and you can't work from home, you are eligible for the leave support payment. Excuse me. if you are unwell.
She's isolating at home.
I was about to say coughing nowadays is a bit like, ooh.
Yeah, we're not in the same room. We're safe.
We're all in different parts of the country.
She's on a different island.
Very, very far removed. Yeah. If they're unwell, but not isolating, which, gosh, I think
we did not plan for this question. By the way, I have thrown AJ a curveball with this one.
Yeah, and it probably comes down to. Yeah, I think if it's to do with COVID and you're unwell, you're obviously going to be isolating.
Yeah.
So leave support payment. If you are unwell outside of COVID, it comes down to sick leave.
Sick leave, yeah.
That's how I frame it, yeah.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sorry, how do you handle it with, like, say, staff and sick kids? So you've got a kid who's sick at home. Is that staff member allowed to come to work? Because you don't want them to take down your entire workforce.
No.
If it's like a restaurant style front of house setup, but they might be asymptomatic. So should they be putting rules in place around that kind of thing?
That is, yes, I would encourage people to have a policy around managing things like this, particularly in a bigger enterprise where you've got more than five employees. I would encourage people to basically take a COVID safety plan and then slightly adapt it, add sections in and go, okay, so here's the what ifs. If we have this situation, for example, what Dave's raised around having sick kids at home, what's our policy?
Yeah.
I would encourage them to have a policy around that person going to get a test. Hard to say if it's going to be a rapid antigen test or a PCR, standard PCR, but I would encourage sort of having some documented procedures around the what ifs, and then that gives a bit of clarity for people taking aside the leave support payment and the rest of that side of the conversation. But it just gives some clarity around, okay, well, yeah, I've got a child with a sore throat. The child probably needs to get tested, let's be honest, but I'll go and get tested as well, and then we can work out from there test results are back. And then there's also, as well as the leave support payment, there's the short-term absence payment, which is designed around waiting on test results.
Oh, so yes, there is, isn't there? Yeah.
Another payment that, again, is based around being a front of house or a front-facing person, as opposed to working from home, obviously. So more details on that, but it's all, you know, it's what you look into in terms of trying to manage that kind of testing, the what-ifs scenario.
And I think you do have to think about it.
Yeah, and I think AJ, what's just, always with when we're starting to talk about policies and staff and stuff, you always want to make sure you've got a bit of a process around that. So, say you want to just make sure you put some good guidelines and processes and policies around that. And I think that's a really obvious one that most people would want to put in place to say, hey, look, if your kid's sick, we'd like you to get a test before you come back into the office, even if it's office, to be honest, or work. You might have staff member goes, I want to come back in the office. You're like, what's the process that people need to think about of making sure they communicate that really well to their staff, but also make sure it's a good process?
It's having that conversation prior to the issues arising, isn't it? It's about identifying, well, in your particular business and where so many different scenarios, of course, that could happen, but in your particular business and where there are issues with potentially sick kids or sick partners or elderly parents or, let's say, immunosuppressed people, you know, taking that's all sort of the part of the risk assessment that you should have already done as part of your COVID-19 safety plan, which should have been in place since March 2020, just saying. If you haven't done that, now is the time. There's a requirement under the legislation by WorkSafe to have a COVID safety plan. Every business, doesn't matter if you're big or small, needs to have documented its processes around hygiene, processes around all the things we're talking about now. So as part of that, a risk assessment is, you'll have heard bandied around for the last 3 months since the announcement around the COVID vaccination certificates were put out there. Basically, risk assessment is where you take a task and a role and you look at, well, what risk, what exposure capacity is there, and then you give it a rating and then you put mitigations or controls in place. We've got a lot of support if you need that, by the way. We've got documents and resources up the yin yang. So if you need a hand, give us a call. But basically, in terms of a policy around processes, around all of the stuff, ideally you have, if you've got front-facing workforce that has to be involved with the public, documenting what the bubbles or the work pods look like, what happens when there's an exposure event, how the isolation process happens, if it happens, what payment could and can be received, individual conversations with those people seeking agreement, not unilaterally deciding if any reductions in work hours are going to happen, aligning payments and work hours are really important, especially in minimum wage roles, really important, because there's a lot of case law that's sort of fallen out of the woodwork in the last 18 months about if you reduce payment don't reduce payment unilaterally, but B, if you do reduce payment, ensure that those work hours are aligned with the payment, because otherwise there could be a breach of the Minimum Wage Act, which is a separate complete, you know, issue to go to the Employment Relations Authority over. So but always, of course, consulting with your employees. So going to them and saying, look, in this planning meeting that everyone's going to have, we talk about all these sort of functional isolation policies, hygiene procedures, all this sort of stuff. But equally, what does it look like around how we manage this, and then individual conversations around payment? And if you are isolating and you have some work from home, but not, you can't meet all those minimum guaranteed hours, what does that look like? Does that look like reduced hours for that particular period of time? If that's agreed to, great. It needs to be then documented in a variation to your employment agreement. And you can make that relatively subjective. And what I mean by that is you can have a variation letter that states, if in the circumstances that X person is required to isolate for whatever period of time, these variations to the employment agreement kick in. This will end when the isolation period ends. So it can be quite, it can be designed so it kicks in and then kicks out depending on what the circumstances are. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah, I guess, totally. Yeah, because I guess in some ways, AJ, you know, that, like you said, that we businesses should have had a COVID-19 health and safety policy in place. I do think maybe now it might have kicked a few people up the arse to go, oh geez, I've actually got to have a plan. But I guess your key message you do is just sit down your staff and be really open about what is the plan, what are we going to do if this happens, as you said, what's the training and infrastructure and process we need to be around teams, sanitization, whatever it might be. So I think every time we do something on people and staff, it's always about communication, isn't it? Like, communication is kind of the catch-all of this part.
I think it's massively important. It's like, one, from a technical point of view, and like making sure you meet your legalities, but two, like, there's the opportunity now to strengthen your team, you know, to build a team that's never going to want to leave you. I think I've said this before. It's like, if you stand by them now, they'll stand by you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's like, check in on them, make sure they're okay, treat them fairly, keep them super up to date with what's going on, don't blindside them with anything. And all of those things in a world that's fairly uncertain are going to help them feel secure.
Correct.
Which I think is really important right now.
And there's a whole section in the Act, and I know I talk about this a lot. You guys will be rolling your eyes right now, but
don't know what you're talking about, AJ.
No, not at all, AJ.
Section 4 of the Employment Relations Act, you know, it prescribes what communication is, and it prescribes that you have an obligation to act in good faith, and good faith means communicating in a clear, precise, constructive manner. And that's actually written into the Act, and people don't realise it's actually prescribed. If you go to the Employment Relations Authority, the judge will find against you if you don't follow that process.
Communication, yeah.
And so
is it bad that I kind of like to think that's the way business owners want to act?
Oh, no, it's great,
being
Dave.
A bit naive.
Awesome. I don't.
I think, Dave, you're right, but I do think what I think can happen in and I guess COVID has changed things so quickly, you know, that 1 minute we're all happy go lucky and we're all enjoying the best summer and all that sort of stuff. Next, we're like, oh gosh, we're back here again and there's no toilet paper in the supermarket. Like, it's this quickly changing environment that can always lead to a bit of panic.
No toilet in the supermarket? I haven't been. I refused to go to the supermarket because I don't want to be that guy.
But there was other stuff and I'm like, oh, really? But, you know, it does create, you know, and this, you know, without getting too deep and meaningful, we're all connected now to the world. We're constantly getting information, so we're always up to date. And I think this self-fulfilling prophecy of, oh, have I got to worry about stuff, creates fear. And I guess when fear or something needs to change quickly, shortcuts can be made, if that makes sense. Yeah. So I think suddenly I'm a business owner, I've got to adapt because, right, I've actually got to make sure my teams are divided. I'm doing stuff by a blunt email rather than actually a good conversation. And it's not through bad intent. They're probably you know, most business owners really care about their staff, want to look after them, but they're thinking, I've just got to get some stuff done here. I want to, and the intent's not a bad one, but they're just, if you slow down sometimes,
it's the classic, isn't it? The same message read when you're feeling half full to half empty is read totally differently. Do you know what I mean?
I listened to an interview with Greg Foran, CEO of Air New Zealand. It was kind of just actually before Christmas. And he was talking a lot about, obviously, I think it was 3 weeks into the job or something when Wuhan happened. And so, you know, there's a christening by far. But one of the things he termed through the whole pandemic for Air New Zealand was panic slowly. And what he meant by that is, this is not great, but let's not make some rash decisions here because it could have some really bad consequences. So we have to make decisions. We've talked very a lot about that, but let's not go and do things hastily, which then might come up and actually have some really bad consequences. So I think that's quite a good idea. Panic slowly. And this, I think, is quite a good analogy maybe to go through this
process. That's a great phrase.
Yeah. Mm. Taking on your point there, AJ, is, and we haven't got this on our document, but I'll just go on a little tangent here. I think, look, one thing that we've got now is we've got great technology to communicate with your team. Doesn't matter if they are in offices, they're in restaurants or whatever, hairdressers, like. And the written form of communication when we're not in person tends to be our default. Email, text messages, that sort of thing. Mm. And Dave, you made a really good point there. Written form of communication is, I can't remember the percentage, but it's actually like very little of actually what communication is. Like, tone, body language is huge part to actually your message. And I think there is some great technologies and tools out there which enable you to communicate in more context. And the one that I've used recently, Dave used it a bit, and I've used it more for training and explaining things to certain team members, there's a tool called Loom. There's a mobile app, you can do it mobile and stuff. But Loom, what that allows you to do is record a short video, send people a link, and they can view the video of you talking through an issue. You can screen share, by the way. It's really good for a screen sharing if you want to talk through a process on the screen. Now, why I think that something like that tool is really important is you explaining a new process to your team through video and stuff. People can see your tone, hear your tone, or they can't see, but you can explain so much more than in an email. And I think things like that of just keeping your team updated on a regular basis of using these tools when you can't necessarily get everyone in a room, I think are really powerful just to make sure people are engaged, they feel comfortable what's going on. You can explain things in more in-depth process. And it's also can be quite spontaneous, so you can give really good updates for it. So
something like Loom, it's for visual learners as well, though, isn't it? Correct. Do you know what I mean? Because it's like, I can see you do something rather than, you know, it's like that age-old thing you have to do when you're a kid, isn't it? Like write instructions to boil a kettle and everyone will write it in a totally different way. What I mean? Whereas this is effectively, you can explain it, you can show it, you can do everything. So there's heaps of software out there that will make this whole process easier. And a lot of them are free, aren't they?
Yeah, most of them have some really good freemium options. I'll put a link to Loom, but we're not sponsored or anything like that. Just it's a really good tool. So I'll put a link down to that, and it's super useful. And I must admit, it's become a bit of a default for me for communication managers or team members. Me and Dave have used it with some of our other business partners on communicating on some of the new products and services we're doing. So it's really good because what happens when people get a long email? They go, oh, God, I've got to read a long email. Whereas if you give a video, you can give tone. You can explain so much more. Anyway, that's a little side note.
I'm laughing at that because I'm a classic for sending long emails, aren't I?
Yeah, but AJ, you do need I think that's a fair point.
Good capture at 5 minutes, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does capture. But as AJ, I guess there is a catch-all here though, that some things you'd really want nicely documented in writing with some changes.
Yes, of course.
Per our team meeting, here's the new whatever.
Yeah.
And then you can.
But then the other glory of Loom is you still have the digital record. I sent it on this date. And I'm pretty sure it shows you when they've viewed it.
Yeah, it does. It does.
So it's kind of like an automatic acceptance, isn't it? Which is cool.
Yeah, correct.
Just morphing this a little bit more of a tangent, but although a tangent we were intending to go in, when delivering and engaging with your team around not necessarily directions, instructions, but, you know, maybe new ways of working, policy change, all that sort of stuff, I think it's really important to be clear as a business owner to leave two things very separate there. One is you have engagement around operational, functional discussions and directions. And then in this particular environment where there is a multitude of different working circumstances, having a one-on-one check-in once a week, that's a separate, it's just a check-in. It's not delivering any kind of operational information. It is literally just a one-on-one check-in just to see, because this, as we've already said, it's such a fast-moving, amorphous, changing beast. And there's so many aspects that can change from one week to the next with, well, for example, someone in their household, your employee's household falls ill and they're very, very ill, and it's maybe not COVID, it doesn't matter, it could be anything. And checking in on that mental health and wellness space is really, really critical. And we have done some preparation on this because we did want to cover it off. But certainly I think in terms of the communication side, the critical factor there is keeping those two things very separate.
Yep. Yeah. I think we've and I'll leave another link below. We use a tool here at Rightway called Channel, which is kind of a well-being check-in for our staff. And the reason we did that, and they've given us a lot of training as well, which is really awesome, but one of the advices they gave you is one day someone could be fine, but the next day, as you said, AJ, maybe it's someone's got sick or just everyone's over COVID and that causes its own pressures and stuff for the households and families and stuff. Like, you know, because we're not all sitting there next door to each other, and the world's changed a lot from that anyway, you know, you don't know what's going on. You can't just sit there and go, oh, Dave's a bit quiet in the office today. You haven't got that context to go through. So being over communicating, over, you know, checking in and forgetting about work when you're having those check-ins. And one of the things the channel people talk to us about is It's what I can't remember the exact number, but it was something like it will take you 7 times of asking, are you okay, on average, before someone actually says, no, they're not okay.
Yeah.
And yeah. And we heard that. I was like, whoa, that's so, you know, you may have asked for like 2 weeks in a row every day, and you still might not kind of got that yet for some people to feel go, actually, sure. It's really tough. My parents are kind of sick at the moment. The kids are at home, and it's just, yeah, it's just shit. Or whatever. Oh gosh, I've sworn I might have to put the E on our podcast.
I also think the nature of like an office environment, just for example, is like, I'll go and make a cup of coffee. One of the other staff members will be up there. We'll have a chat about the weekend, all of those kind of things. As soon as you're working from home, you lose that, unless you actually make a special, like you go out of your way to phone them. Not totally about work, but actually just to be like, what's going on? Because you'd normally have those conversations on a day-to-day basis when you're in the office or when you're out at work, but you don't have that when you work from home, unless you put it into action or you're calling them about something else.
Yep. Exactly.
So I think
right.
it's, you know, that kind of thing's actually important to realize that actually working, you can just go straight and work from home. Yeah. But actually you need to put time and effort into other areas. You know, maybe it is having, forcing some like coffee breaks on everyone all together, right? You're going to catch up in your teams and do some, I don't know, come up with some random games, get people to actually hang out a little bit more.
Well, Isha, who's part of the admin team, and she did this, would have been about Octoberish, I think. It would have been actually, but maybe a bit sooner than that. So Isha just came up at Right Way on a Friday at 10:45.
Friday quiz.
We have the Friday quiz, and we all log in and stuff. But it is simple things like where people can connect. I think one thing I'll also add here to this the well-being part is, and look, you know, the obviously government have been advising us about this, but I think it's really important that you have a conversation with your staff going, hey, look, if you have to isolate, have you got the support you need to drop off groceries? Or whatever that might be, you know, food, and obviously I was the main one, because one of the things I was looking at for our business is one of the things that concerned me about everyone going into the office wasn't just the fact that, you know, people would get sick and all that kind of stuff, is if the whole office went down, we would have no one on the ground then to support staff who needed support with that kind of thing. And so I do think it's important that people understand, hey, I live alone. Because we're in the modern world where, you know, people, I'm from the UK, so, you know, similar, so close family might not be nearby. Yeah, we've, you know, got friendship group and that sort of stuff, but people are busy. So I think have a conversation going, hey, if you need to lock down, what's your support? Do you need to ask to help in some way? You know, and to your point, Dave, of, you know, this is a time where you lean into your employees and just make sure they're okay, because that's the stuff that makes employees for life. Not that that's a thing anymore. But
and having the chat even now, like, how can I help you? Like, with everything that's going on, what is important to you? Is it social connections? Is it knowing what the future's going to look like as best as I can tell you? Is it, do you know what I mean? Given what?
And showing vulnerability too, Dave, around, you know, you're the employer. By definition, as you know, that gives you a different engagement level or dynamic with your employees. But it doesn't mean that you can't show vulnerability and say, look, I'm really struggling at the moment too. I've got XYZ going on in my personal life. I'm really worried about XYZ, you know, to do with employees. And then I've got to really reconfigure my whole business in order to keep everybody, you know, engaged. And showing vulnerability doesn't make you weaker. It's just it gives the other person, I guess, validation to then share their own issues, doesn't it?
But even saying that, with can you just tick along as you are right now? I'll give you more instruction in 2 days' time because this is what's going on. They don't feel like they're being ignored or pushed to the side. They understand where you're at.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? True. Giving a bit more is probably the right thing to do right now. Sharing a bit more.
I can agree more with you, AJ, on that. And I think, look, we've all had I won't name the accounting manager because I'll embarrass her, but we were in a meeting, and it was quite an important meeting, and in ran her 5-year-old son, who was stark naked, and the embarrassment, I found it hilarious. She did not, and dad was like in the background going, come back here. So we've kind of all had that personal connection. But that aside is, you know, I think the pandemic and these lockdowns is that it doesn't matter what role you are, you know, a title's a title, it's not who you are, is it kind of has brought that home life and what goes on in your world so much closer. And I think as leaders, you're bang on, AJ, like just being a bit vulnerable, talking about, you know, some of the pressures you might be feeling through this, it gives permission to then for people to that they can open up. And look, yep. You know, yeah. Speaking as a bloke, we're not great traditionally at that. We're getting better, I think. And I think that's awesome. But, you know, just, and I know for some industries where it's very male focused or whatever, like it's not normally a thing, but if you don't talk, it's not good. Like, so I think sharing some vulnerabilities yourself as a leader or as a business owner, whatever you, or manager, whatever role you want to give yourself, you are definitely a leader, by the way. If you didn't realize that now, problem. But showing some vulnerability is really important just to build a bit of trust and just open a conversation. People go, actually, I'm not okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, completely agree.
Conscious of time, this one's a good, this is a long one. Let's talk positive. I think what I'm thinking of by an idea of a podcast is I think we might, Pip, who's a COO at Channel, I'll contact her and see if they can come on because they've got a bunch of wellness coaches and advisors and stuff for businesses. And we'll see if we can get them on to do maybe a wellbeing special. I might try and do that for next week, actually, because I think that, again, it's just timely on just, we can't talk about it enough. By the way, there's a good our third or fourth ever podcast we did was with Craig Hudson from Zero, who's the MD of Zero. He talks a lot about it. So if you scroll down to the bottom, we'll do the reverse sort. There's a really good episode initially in that, but we'll try and get the people from Channel on as well. Let's talk positives because you know we've got to get on with life. Dave, what's the positives?
Wow, the positives. Am I letting the positives? Well, I personally, although Omicron's coming in, which isn't great, I do believe that potentially the pandemic is switching to endemic. You know, this is potentially our way out. We've got such high vaccination rates. We've got our boosters going through. We've got rapid antigen testing coming in. So if COVID's got to come through, maybe this is a good time, you know, and maybe it's actually time to start thinking about what does next summer look like, because touch wood, I'm hoping borders are open. We're kind of starting to see life as normal with tourists coming through, increased workforce. So maybe where you've just been kind of trying to survive at the moment, you've actually got the opportunity to start employing more staff. You know, COVID's not going to be gone, don't kid yourself, but hopefully we're definitely more in a state where we're managing it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's not such a buzzword, I guess.
Doesn't start every conversation.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's probably still going to start every conversation, but rather than red, hopefully it's orange. Do you know what I mean? And we've got the borders open and things are going. Because that's maybe a massive part of us, isn't it?
Yeah.
Maybe as an employer, you've been through all of these processes we've talked about and you've come out the end with a really great team.
Yep.
Yeah. I think that's a hell of a point.
An opportunity to grow. Yep.
Because that's the bit, it's like, you know, through every issue you're going to face, there is an opportunity at the other end. And it's about spotting it, seeing it, and going with it early enough, isn't it?
Yeah, so, I completely agree.
You know, if you've got capacity, I would start thinking about what does next summer look like from a growth point of view, because the borders are going to have to open at some point. So surely that's your opportunity if you've been having staff shortages to look at advertising in the places where you might be able to bring someone over. So I know, for example, physiotherapists are very commonly sought after from the UK.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So if the borders open, where there's a massive physio shortage at the moment, you can actually start to bring people in. You can start to get like some experience as well.
Yeah. I just think to that point, Dave, I think once we kind of get into this world, which is, you know, we're back to connected, that word, I think there's going to be a lot of people over the last 2 years who will go, I want to do something completely different in my life. And actually, I want to upend from the UK. There's enough of us over here already. But, you know, I do think that is a huge part of this, that people are, you know, the priorities in life are changed massively for people through this. And I think that once we do open our borders, I think New Zealand's it's not a bad spot. And I do think that you know, the balance we have in life here, the quality of the life and the type of life we can have is going to be, it was attractive enough as it was, but I think that is now going to go even further up the field, to be honest.
Yeah. I reckon if anything, now's the time to be visiting all those places before the tourists come.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd be booking a trip to Mount Cook, Milford Sound, the Great Walks,
Queenstown. Yeah, all that
stuff. You'll never see them like this again.
Yeah. AJ, what about from you?
The positivity side. Well, I think, you know, as Dave's already alluded to, every cloud has a silver lining. And although sometimes you're pushed into situations like this where maybe it's not in your nature to sit and ruminate, maybe it's not something you usually have time to do, you know, maybe some of the silver lining out of maybe potentially having to isolate for 24 days, if that's the case, is that you have the opportunity to build, you know, me from the HR aspect, is build a better relationship with your employees. Is it having a more collaborative approach to tasks, roles, the doing of things? Is it that, you know, and that might even be a scenario where an employee actually comes to you and says, you know what, I've had a great idea for a business of my own. I'm really sorry, I'm going to leave you, but this is what I'm going to do. And you as the employer go, oh my God, that's amazing. That is such a cool thing to do and good on you for doing it. And you are their supporter in the next phase of their life. You don't have to be their best friend necessarily, but you might be the person that's offering mentorship and guidance and opening their own business. And, you know, who knows? But there's a lot of opportunity to come out of challenge. And we've always seen that, you know, the world wars, depression, you know, and the ingenuity of Kiwis in and of themselves is amazing. So there's a lot of positive to come yet, I think.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think to sum up, I think where I see this is I think you, AJ, made a really good point. Like out of adversity is when your challenge is when you get creative. It's when you have to think about things differently. And I know, like I've actually said this a number of times on the podcast, is that this is the time to think about how you can do things differently. We know that there's some of the global trends that were happening already have been fast forwarded by COVID, like online shopping is the obvious one. So just lean into that challenge, you know, really question. I think, as you said, this is an opportunity to really question around your staff structure and think about, well, actually, if I'm not in this business for 3 weeks, what happens? How do I make sure it still runs while I'm not here? Or Dave, who's my key staff member, how do I not say don't rely on him, but how do I get some tasks off Dave? Because that gives space to Dave to do more and add more value to your business than just managing things potentially. So I think lean into that challenge of thinking differently. And I do think the big thing, that the trend that's going here, if you look at where technology is going, where the world's going and the way we're connected, products and services are not really changing. It's how they're distributed that's changing. You know, I always use an example with Uber. Uber's not changing what we do. We still get a taxi from A to B. What it's changing is how we communicate and book that service and how it's just made that a better experience. And lots of the technologies out there do that. So I really think, you know, whether it doesn't matter if you're a restaurant, you're a hairdresser, you're you make a product, whatever it is, how you interact with your customers is changing. How we interact with our customers, we're doing a lot more online. So we're looking at different tools to how we collaborate better with our customers. So embrace that challenge. Some won't work and some will. I just think, you know, use this as an opportunity to really breathe into the new world, because otherwise you get left behind and that's not good. And you won't be able to go on holiday. You'll still be stressed and that's a waste of time. Right. That's a long podcast. It's an hour and 2 minutes. So we probably should wrap it up there. So look, if there's any questions, especially from AJ's stuff in the HR, contact details in the show notes. So, you know, wherever you're listening, click down the information and we'll put our contact details there. But stay safe, everyone. Thanks, Dave. And thanks, AJ.
Thanks for having me again.
Pleasure. Thank you.
AJ, you survived.
You're fine. A
round of applause.
Evidently, I did. Yeah.
Nailed it. Poor internet. Oh, you still crushed it. Well done.
Thanks, everyone. See ya.
Bye.
Bye.